This year marks the 50th anniversary of Milwaukee's open housing marches, which put the city and the issue of housing segregation at the forefront of the civil rights movement. The NAACP Youth Council organized 200 consecutive days of demonstrations in support of fair housing legislation. In 1968, the Common Council approved a bill outlawing discrimination in selling and renting homes. But half a century later, Milwaukee remains one of the most segregated cities in the country. Reggie Jackson joins us now. He's an oral historian and head griot of America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. Reggie, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Well, the fight for fair housing in Milwaukee goes back to at least 1962, when Alderwoman Vel Phillips started introducing fair housing bills to the Common Council. Can you tell us about what conditions she was trying to address for African Americans living in Milwaukee?
For the most part, at that particular time, blacks were stuck in one part of the city, the central part of the city, just north of downtown, an area that had been basically the oldest housing stock in the city, a place where they'd tried to move out of. They've expanded a little bit to the west, but they weren't able to move south or east in the city at all. So they were attempting to move to other parts of the city that had newer homes.
So those first efforts of Vel Phillips to introduce fair housing legislation, they failed. So when did the issue come to a head for African Americans in Milwaukee and beyond, and result in these marches 50 years ago?
Well, they began to kind of address the issue of why the rest of the Common Council wouldn't even consider a discussion about Vel Phillips' bill. And so she became involved with the NAACP, and they began to work together to raise awareness of the issue, to begin to protest at the homes of aldermen, and also to get out into the streets and begin to plan marches. And so the marches that they put together in August of 1967, which lasted all the way through 1968, were their greatest effort to raise awareness of the fact that blacks couldn't occupy any spaces on the south side of the city in particular.
Can you talk a little bit about why housing segregation in the 60s was such an important issue for Milwaukee's black leaders?
Yes, you know, segregation, contrary to what most of us believe, is not something that happens naturally. It happens at the behest of the federal government, who began to intervene in the 1930s and really demand that new communities be segregated. So they basically proposed to new communities that they use racial restrictive covenants to keep African Americans out of specific neighborhoods and keep those neighborhoods as white as possible. And so when you look at Milwaukee County, the 18 suburbs of Milwaukee County use these racial restrictive covenants extensively, and 16 of the 18 use them. Only Oak Creek and River Hills didn't have racial restrictive covenants. And what it basically did was it kept those communities very white. And even if you look today, if you look at the 19 cities in Milwaukee County, there are only three outside of the city of Milwaukee that have an African American population above 5%.
I want to talk about the demonstrations. There were 200 consecutive days of demonstrations, and some of these marches, I mean, they began small, but they really built, and there were counter-protesters on the other side, and they were quite a moment in Milwaukee's history. Can you take us to those days, what it was like?
Yes, absolutely. So when they began the march across the 16th Street Viaduct to the south side, the initial march, the first time they did it, they were met by a group of counter-protesters who were angry that they were coming to that part of the city. And so they were yelling angry things at them, racial epithets, things of that nature. And, you know, they got through it that first night. When they came back the second night, the counter-protesters were much, much larger. They estimate that probably about 5,000 counter-protesters were there that second time. And they were much more angry than they were the night before. They were throwing bottles, rocks, racial epithets. You know, many of the people who were in the march got separated from the other members of the march. There was not a large enough police presence to really protect them. And it really became very hazardous for those marchers, but they decided to fight through it and continue marching, and did so for 200 consecutive days. And the longer they did it, the smaller the counter-protesters group became. And after a while, they would very rarely even see any counter-protesters.
You mentioned police officers there. What role did the police officers play? I mean, these days there is a tension between police officers sometimes and minority communities that we're seeing playing out over the past couple of years. What was it like then?
Well, there's been bad relations between the black community and the Milwaukee Police Department for an extended period of time. Going back to the 1950s and 60s, there were several high-profile cases where blacks were killed by the police. And so even if we look at what happened just recently last year in Sherman Park, a lot of the civil unrest in Milwaukee is seen, including the civil unrest of 1967, has been related to police activity. And we need to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, there are a lot of other factors that are related to that. That helped us to have the unrest in Sherman Park last year. The economic situation, the loss of high-quality jobs, the lack of programming for young people in the community, all built on top of just really considered a very disrespectful treatment by the Milwaukee Police Department. All of those things kind of came together in Sherman Park last year and led to that explosion.
And we're talking with Reggie Jackson right now, head griot of America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. And we're talking about the city's marches for fair housing in 1967 and what housing looks like for African Americans in that city 50 years later. And Reggie, we haven't yet talked about Father James Groppi. He was maybe an unlikely leader of those marches and was on the front lines of the protests with the NAACP Youth Council. And we have a clip of him here after a march that was met with violent opposition.
We have tried every means possible to bring fair housing legislation to the city of Milwaukee. And we're going to continue to march. It's up to the government of this city and of this state to see to it that we can exercise our constitutional right of freedom of speech. And we're going to exercise that, regardless of what the danger. We'll die for that right.
That was Father James Groppi, a white Roman Catholic priest. How did he become so crucial to these demonstrations?
Well, you know, Father Groppi had been a supporter of open housing in Milwaukee, kind of on the sidelines for a while, and he became actively involved as the movement grew. And he decided that it was his place to step in and speak for those people who were protesters, because there weren't many people from the white community who were speaking on their behalf. So he decided that he would make his voice known, and he became accepted by the NAACP Youth Council and the other members that were protesting, including Alderwoman Vale Phillips. And they grew a very strong bond between themselves and Father Groppi, and, you know, he became one of the leaders of that activity, trying to prevent people from moving to the South Side. He was very adamant that it made no sense whatsoever that people couldn't live where they wanted to live.
And did the movement in general at that time, besides Father Groppi, did it have other allies among the white community in Milwaukee?
There were some, but for the most part, they were pretty quiet. People were afraid because, if we remember, in 1967, there had been the civil unrest that summer as well, just a couple months before the marches took place. So that civil unrest in the martial law that was declared in the city by the mayor, that really kind of turned a lot of whites off in terms of their support of the movement. And so they really, for the most part, as a result of that, they kind of had to go at it alone without many white compatriots at that particular time. There were some, but not a great deal.
So moving forward a bit in time, in 1968, President Johnson signed a National Fair Housing Act, and the Milwaukee Common Council then followed suit by passing an even stronger law of their own. What did that Milwaukee law say?
It basically said that it was against the law to discriminate in housing, that people should be able to live where they wanted to live. The federal law actually outlawed a few things that really helped to create segregation. It outlawed the use of racial restrictive covenants. It outlawed the use of redlining. It put a thing in place that people could finally go to actually file formal complaints about housing discrimination on the local level as well as the national level. However, on the federal level, Mitt Romney's dad, George Romney, was in charge of housing and urban development, and he was really a big proponent of that new law. He created a program they call Open Communities, which demanded that any community that was still practicing segregation would be denied federal funds for any project. So whether it be road projects, power projects, water projects, any of those. And President Nixon got word of that, and he basically killed that program almost immediately. And Mr. Romney ended up leaving housing and urban development. And so there were mechanisms in place to fight housing discrimination, but they weren't used very forcefully. And as a result, we continue to have a tremendous amount of segregation. Even a census that was done in 1975 showed that on the south side of Milwaukee, the numbers of blacks who had actually moved there after the marches were still very, very low. In most of those neighborhoods, they were in the single digits.
So the laws that passed at the federal and the state level and city level in Milwaukee, those were not, it sounds like, a complete victory even at the time.
Yeah, they were kind of a victory in terms of the fact that people have been fighting to actually have those laws placed on the books. But the problem with them was the enforcement mechanism behind them wasn't strong enough that it curtailed, people continuing to discriminate. Even to this day, there's still a mechanism in place that people just aren't aware of, that they can file housing discrimination complaints. In many cases, people will go and hire private attorneys to do the work for them instead of going through the government.
Well, Reggie, I want to fast forward to the present day. Milwaukee, still one of the most segregated cities in the country, even when compared with other cities and regions that were lagging behind in terms of lingering segregation. What's going on in Milwaukee?
Well, probably the biggest factor that makes our region the most segregated is the fact that African Americans don't live in the suburbs or exurban counties here. If you look at Milwaukee County, only about 6% of African Americans in Milwaukee County live in the suburbs, and that's a very low rate as compared to some other very big cities. Even some cities that are pretty segregated, like Chicago and Cleveland, have a much higher percentage of blacks in the suburbs. And so that's one of the factors. As blacks tried to move out to the suburbs in the 60s and early 70s, when the jobs were still readily abundant here and, high-quality family-supporting jobs, when they could actually afford to move to those communities, they weren't allowed to. And then as the economy started to change and those jobs went away and people aren't making as much money today as they were then, now they can't afford to live in those communities. It's too expensive. So when they had the money to move there, they weren't allowed to because of, different things that were in place. And as they gained, an ability to move there, it simply isn't viable for many people now because they can't afford to. Even blacks who have the money to move to the suburbs still primarily live in the central part of the city. We have the highest percentage of blacks of higher income living in concentrated poverty neighborhoods. I think the only city that's worse is Detroit, Michigan.
Talking with Reggie Jackson right now, head griot of America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee, talking about the city's marches for fair housing in 1967 and what housing looks like for minorities in that city 50 years later. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Reggie about the open housing marches or housing in the city of Milwaukee today? Is housing segregation a problem where you live, whether it's in Milwaukee or elsewhere? And if you took part, maybe in those marches 50 years ago, do you have memories of them? How do you feel about where the city stands now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll pick up our conversation in just a little bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and right now we're picking up a conversation with Reggie Jackson of America's Black Holocaust Museum about the marches of protest that protested housing segregation in Milwaukee 50 years ago and why the city remains so segregated today. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What are your memories of Milwaukee's Fair Housing Marches in 1967? And looking now at the city 50 years later, do you think that that movement made a difference? Have you seen housing segregation impact your life, your area where you live? And what steps do you think are needed to address those stark divides that we still see in urban areas? You can let us know at 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll go to our callers right now. We've got Andy with us first in Price County. Andy, hi.
Hey, hi.
What do you want to share?
Yeah, I in 67, I was, I'm 64 years old now, but I was a student at Riverside High School. And
in Milwaukee.
Yeah, on the east side of Milwaukee there. And we had some friends with the Socialist Workers Party. And they came by with the van, and they picked a few of us up, and we went over to Father Grappi's church. I think that was St. Benedict's, and we went on a few marches, and it was fun walking and singing. And then when you get to the other end of the bridge, and the hatred that was coming back was pretty intense. Yes, it was.
So you remember it to this day. Do you feel like it made a difference as someone who took part in this?
Well, I haven't lived in Milwaukee for quite a while, but apparently, you know, in spite of the efforts, no, that doesn't seem like a lot of progress. But it's nice that people can get together and try to make a change.
And Andy, did you stay involved in that movement at all after 1967, that era we're talking about?
Well, through my years in high school after that, yeah, I was there till I left Milwaukee in about 70 or 71, I guess, and I haven't lived there in the city much since then. I have spent a good bit of time in working in the South since then, and it's interesting to see some comparisons and similarities in certain places.
Andy, thanks a lot for calling and sharing those memories. And Reggie, Andy was there for at least a few marches there he's talking about, and remembering, he says, the vitriol and the hate.
Yeah, you know, that was something I think that came as a shock to some people, to see that in Milwaukee. We typically think of that type of hatred being something that was more common in the South during the Civil Rights Movement. It was very common here in Milwaukee as well. You know, one of the things that we didn't have, we had segregation in Milwaukee. We had segregated spaces. We just didn't have signs, you know, designating spaces for blacks or whites only. But we did have, you know, segregated seating in different places. We had certain, you know, restaurants and hotels that wouldn't allow blacks to be a customer at all. In fact, during the heyday of Milwaukee's Black Entertainment District, we had famous musicians and singers that would come to the city, and they weren't allowed to stay in most of the hotels in the city. They actually stayed in private residences that black people owned in the city.
Andy, thanks a lot for calling and sharing that. And let's go next to Matthew in Waukesha County. Matthew, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. So I grew up, I spent the first few years until eighth grade in MPS, and then my parents moved out to the suburbs. So something I want to ask is why this isn't something that we learn about in our education. I didn't even hear about the Fair Housing Act until my senior year of college. So I guess, what do you think, maybe if people knew more about this past and kind of the reality of how segregation got so bad in Wisconsin, or I guess in Milwaukee, that, you know, things would be different now? Or
Matthew, thank you. I appreciate that. He's wondering why this hasn't been talked about more. I wonder if that's starting to change. What do you think, Reggie?
Yeah, it's absolutely changing. I think that's a great question that he asked about why we don't learn it. Part of the reason we don't is simply there's certain parts of our history that we tend to ignore, those ugly parts of our history we don't like to talk about in our history classes. And I've been doing a series of talks, presentations that are called The Hidden Impact of Segregation, here locally. So I've done it in several places in Milwaukee. I just did it out in Mequon last week. I did it in Waukesha. So I've been spreading this information about how segregation developed, the mechanisms behind it, the impacts of it. And it's been very well attended by people at all of the venues that I've been at, whether it be libraries, schools, whatever. I think people are very interested in how we became the most segregated city. I think they're tired of hearing that we're the most segregated city, and I think they want to do something about it. And I think the first step in that process is to learn how we became the most segregated community and look at what that's actually done to the community. Because in addition to segregation, you have concentrated poverty, which has become part of the norm in Milwaukee. And so with those two combined together, it makes it very difficult for people who are living in those impoverished communities to get outside of those spaces. And it impacts the schools. It impacts everything within the city. Typically, people who live outside the city, even in the suburbs and the exurban counties, they don't recognize that it has an impact on their communities as well, because we have to pay large amounts of money because of the level of poverty we have in the city of Milwaukee.
And Reggie, what do you think is needed today in order to start making the vision that those marchers had 50 years ago of making Milwaukee a less segregated city a reality?
Well, I think the first thing is just people opening up their communities and welcoming people to their communities from different groups that they're not accustomed to being around. I always end my presentations on the hidden impact of segregation by telling the groups that you have to be willing to take down some of the barriers that are in place to prevent people of color from moving into communities that are very white. In addition to that, there are still several suburban communities around Milwaukee that have zoning laws that really prevent any low-income housing from being built there. And so as long as those zoning laws remain the same, you're going to not have many low-income people, with the exception of elderly people, living in those communities. And so those two things, I think, are important. And also just having people be more cognizant of the fact that we have the open housing law, but it's not strongly enforced, and making it more of an issue for our elected officials to bring forth, enforcement of it in the way that it was intended when they first created the law.
Reggie, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
That was Reggie Jackson, head griot of America's Black Holocaust Museum, talking with us there about residential segregation in Milwaukee 50 years after the city's marches for fair housing. And you can find an article about this on the Central Time Facebook page. While you're there, share your thoughts with us. What are your memories of those marches in 1967? And do you think Milwaukee could or needs to do more to address housing issues today? Let us know on the Central Time Facebook page.